Okay, this is our final hour to go with Barry Eaton. We're going to take your questions, your stories, next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Barry Eaton with us, your phone calls as well. So, Barry, as you did all of this, putting together the book, The Afterlife, have you come to any specific conclusions about the other side?
I guess I've got a lot of conclusions, George. One is that I certainly have absolutely no fear whatsoever. When it's time for me to go back home, none of us know when that's going to be. I had some health problems earlier this year that I thought, well, that could be fatal, but it turned out not to be. But at no stage was I concerned, because I thought, if my time is up, and people on the other side know when our time is up, because that's how they know to come and meet us. That's another thing we didn't mention before. So when our time is up, go with confidence, knowing that you're going to be met by loved ones. The experience is going to be loving, gentle, supportive, and totally natural. And that's it. Nothing to worry about. I think that's the biggest thing that I've discovered. Plus the fact there are so many aspects to the afterlife. There are just so many things. I wrote this book, Afterlife, a couple of years ago. And there was so much more, because I contacted many people on the other side. Since then, things have opened up enormously. I've just completed another book, which will be coming out a bit later on, because it's sort of like volume two. There is just so much to learn about the afterlife.
Absolutely. But you're not afraid. You're not scared of dying.
No.
But tell me about these visitors who come and join us at the moment of death.
Well, everybody's got visitors that are there, and it may well be, if you are alone and you perhaps an orphan or whatever, and you have no family, no friends, you've been living alone a long time, it may well be that it's your guide, or it may be a spirit of your mother that you may have even not met that person. But for the rest of us, there is always at least a couple of loved ones there waiting for us. As I said, my grandfather, when I was a kid, his whole family, his sisters, his parents, all came to meet him and escort him. It was like a family reunion, and they were sort of gathered around his bed, and he was talking to them. You might have thought it was in delirium, but I've heard of this so often with people, that there are people, spirits, just waiting to welcome us home, and that's the lovely thing about it.
Let's take some calls here for you. We'll pick it up by going to David in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Welcome to the program. Hi, David.
Yes, I'm another researcher in the nature of what you call the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
A number of things. I wish it were possible to have an extended dialogue with you. I'd like to read your books. A few things I wondered about that you had done, what acquaintance you had with Emanuel Swedenborg, whose works extend to 35 volumes. About 250 years ago, and also the nature of this other world, this other life, is so much better than this one. Why are we wasting our times in this one? And under the pretense of learning lessons, to what end? I don't know. There's really very little desirable or happy about an intelligent person living in this world, so it appears to me. All these things. I wonder if you have considered any of these things.
Let's get that one first. So, if the afterlife is so wonderful, what are we wasting our time here for? I think it's for lessons learned. What do you think?
Well, very definitely, we're not wasting our time, David. As George says, we're here for a purpose. We've agreed to this, and sure, it's not easy, but if it was just a comfortable, easy ride, we wouldn't learn anything. You think about it, when you have a great day, everything falls into place, you just come home and think, oh, how good was that? It's only when things are a bit tough that you have to sit down and think, well, hang on, whoa, how am I going to get out of this? What am I learning from this? And that's what life is all about. We come down here to learn to balance so that we don't have to come here anymore. And then we can advance as souls, as spirits. And that is the collective soul that we are part of. Because then there are other worlds as well. We don't just come back to Earth. Eventually, we're able to go and visit and live on other worlds, presumably ones that are even better than this. But the afterlife, it's like a holiday place. You work all year, you take your holidays, your vacation, but you can't live in that vacation place. You've got to come back to, I guess, what we could laughingly call reality. And that's what life is. It's reality. Now, as for Swedenborg, yes, I know Emanuel Swedenborg. I actually narrated a series of audio tapes for the Swedenborg Society a few years ago. An amazing man. And he was, what, 18th century or whatever. And his,
even before life, that, born in 1688.
1688, yeah, there you are. So his insights into spirituality and whatever, just wonderful. And we can learn a lot from Swedenborg.
Interesting that somebody of that era would be writing books on the afterlife and doing his own investigating.
Well, why? I mean, we're all interested in what's going to happen when we die.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
It's one of the great mysteries of life, isn't it?
Go to Jackie in Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome to the program. Hi, Jackie.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
You are welcome.
When I was younger, after my three children were born, I went into a deep depression and I attempted suicide. And okay. I was in a dark place and I cried out to God to take me from this place. I could feel the evil around me. It was like I was around demons or spirits that were angry or something. And I was enveloped in a white light, and a man, I thought he was an angel, and he told me that his name was Michael, and that he was an archangel. And at that point, I asked him if he was a good angel or a bad angel, because I wasn't religious. And he enveloped me in a white light that was so full of love that I felt my whole spirit be completely filled with this feeling of love and kindness and light. The light was just amazing. And he took me away from the dark place. But I knew that he was talking to someone, but I wasn't allowed to see him. And they were discussing things and they were showing me things. And then he told me that I had my choice whether I died or whether I went back. And at that time, I explained to him that I had married my husband at 16, and he just married me to get me away from a very abusive home life. And I didn't think he loved me, and he showed me my husband. My husband was in the chapel of the hospital, and he was begging God to let me live. And so I after that, he showed me my children. He showed me things that were going to go on in my lifetime when my children would need me. And he let me choose, and I chose to come back. But since that time, my husband and two of my daughters and my son-in-law and my mom and dad and my sister and brother have passed. And so I have a daughter that lives 3,000 miles away, and she's pretty sick. And I've been sick all my life. I have post-polio syndrome, so I've had multiple operations, and I'm going to have another one in September because of the deformities of the polio and the way that it's affected my bones. So they're doing surgery so that I can keep walking. But I just want to know, you know, I felt like maybe I was being punished for the things because of the way I was left with all these medical problems. And my family that was healthy died suddenly and died of illnesses that were just, you know, unexpected. And my daughters died young. One was 31 when she died. One was 26. And my son-in-law was 30 when he died. My husband was 55, so they all died young. And I felt like there was a reason that I was given these trials of being left alone.
I don't think you were being punished, Jackie. Barry, I don't think people get punished. They're lessons learned, but they're not punished like that, are they?
Look, I couldn't agree more. And Jackie, yours is a It's a very emotional story, and our hearts go out to you. And yes, at once, and it's hard for us to accept this, but before we are actually born, we do agree to some of these life conditions, especially the very severe ones, for whatever reason. But essentially, it is for the growth of our soul. And it has been a hard ride for you, a very hard ride. But you are growing so much, and I can just hear it in your voice, and I can feel your emotion, that you are just growing so much as a soul that I would imagine your guides and all of your spirit helpers are just so proud of you and just for being who you are. And you're doing a wonderful job, and it's really hard, but all I can say is please, please keep going. And you were talking about suicide in the early stage. That would be absolutely disastrous.
When you're afflicted with so many injuries, Barry, like Jackie is,
yeah,
do you think in other lives the same thing happened?
Not necessarily. It's so difficult to generalize on something like this, George. I mean, there can be karma involved. There can be life lessons that we agreed to, as I was explaining much earlier in the program, that we agree with some members of our soul family to come down and help them develop as well as ourselves by going through all of these incredible situations in life. Yeah, life, some people seem to have a very easy life. They're born with a silver spoon in the mouth. They float through life. Riches come their way, all sorts of good things. It seems so easy. Why is it other people have such a hard time? Well, there are many ways. I mean, some of these, from what I've subsequently learned from writing Afterlife, is that some of these are very young souls, and they still have not had time to gather the life experiences and the karma that needs to be balanced. That's one answer, but there are so many answers.
Many, many, many. Jackie, best to you. Dennis in Tucson, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Denny.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Denny.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Barry, I believe earlier in the program you mentioned that you remembered your death in the previous life. I was just wondering.
I was taken back and shown visions of it and taken back in a regression, like a past life regression, taken back to the circumstances. I relived it. I relived being in a... I've written about this quite extensively in my book, Afterlife. And it was quite an amazing situation. And being able to then be taken back in my present form in the regression and shown, like standing in the wings of a film studio while all this is going on and watching myself in a previous life. It was very freaky at first, but I got used to it after a while.
Okay, well, I was wondering, what was your name in the previous life and the name of your grandmother that was there to lead you away?
You're trying to put me on the spot, are you? Name was Brian.
That's a legitimate question.
Fair enough. My name was Brian. I never asked what the name of my grandmother was. I was so busy, I guess, just being part of the whole thing. I didn't think to sort of say, oh, yes, what was your name? Where did you live? What were the addresses? I did get, and it's in part of my story, where I lived in England. I did get where my wife was. I got my wife's name. I got my son's name from the marriage at the time, various other things. I just didn't get my grandmother's name, unfortunately. I even got my mother's name. But for some reason, I didn't ask my grand. I just called her Gran, like all kids do. You know, you think of your grand, and that's why I called her, Gran.
Harry Houdini spent the rest of his life trying to find mediums. He was unsuccessful. How difficult is it, Barry, to find the right one?
I guess it can be as difficult as finding the right doctor or garage mechanic or whatever. It's a matter of either recommendation to start off with, also using your own intuition rather than just going down a newspaper ad or Googling it on your computer or whatever. You've got to think about these things. It's not just, it's like a past life regression. It's not just the Hollywood time tunnel experience. These are serious matters. And if you are going to go to a good medium, it's like going, as I said, to a doctor. You want to be referred. You want to know that the person you're going to is going to help you. And personal recommendation, I find, is always the very best way.
We'll go to Charles now in Sevastopol, California. Hello, Charles. Thanks for calling.
Sure, and it is a fascinating topic, but here's my thought, and this may be totally against the grain of your previous sort of observations, but see where this goes.
Okay.
And I certainly respect your opinions. My thought is, I think it's an obligation to be willing to check out or sort of end your life at a certain point where it becomes a burden on everyone else around you. And I was explaining to the call screener, if I was facing a terminal disease, you know, cancer or something else, and I knew that it was going to be hundreds of thousands of dollars to keep me alive for another year or two, something like this, I wouldn't want to burden everyone else around me. I would just say, you know what, pull the plug in the machine or just let me have a dose of morphine or something. In other words, I don't really understand this stigma that's placed on suicide. I do understand where some people might commit suicide to escape the problems in their life, or if they have severe mental disorders like depression and so forth. Okay, I totally understand where that's a different kind of category. But in my mind, and in fact in many indigenous cultures in previous times, it was considered an obligation not to burden those around you when you reach a certain point where it was really impractical, for a better choice of words, to kind of keep you alive in that last, you know, sort of moment of your life. I would prefer just to say, okay, I've had my fair share of time here. I've done the best I can. I don't want to cost $500,000 or something to keep me alive for another 2 years. And I willingly go with a, you know, fairly balanced frame of mind, and I'm not holding any bitterness or bad thoughts. I just see it as a practical matter. Why is this such a bad thing, or do you see it as a bad thing?
Well, it's not whether I see it or not. It's what is viewed in the world of spirit. I haven't addressed this in my first book, Afterlife, but I have addressed it in my next book. Without going too much into detail, all I can tell you is that euthanasia, if we want to put a generic term to it, is totally frowned upon in the world of spirit. We have a life contract for a reason. And the one thing I will say is that when I asked about this, I was told sometimes the greatest lesson we can learn for our soul development may well be in those last couple of months of our life, no matter how uncomfortable, how awkward, how painful it may be. Now, that's probably a bitter pill to swallow, if you'll pardon the analogy, but that's what I was told. It's not up to me, but euthanasia is such a hot topic, I know, here in Australia. I don't know what it's like in the States.
Same thing, but, same thing.
But it's not something, and I guess we've all felt like that. I jokingly said to my son, look, if I get to that stage where I'm so totally out of it, please come and put a pillow over my head. But, you know, I was joking, and I realized afterwards I wouldn't expect anybody to do that. But from what I understand, if you are, say, on life support and being kept alive under artificial conditions, turning off the life support and allowing nature to take its course, allowing God to be able to intervene, shall we say, if you want to put it that way, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
We're coming back for final phone calls with you, Barry, on Coast to Coast AM. Whitley Strieber joins us on our next Coast to Coast program, talking about his latest work, Alien Hunter. And then later on, we'll have those Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. When we come back in just a moment, let's wrap up with final phone calls here with Barry Eaton, the author of Afterlife. Welcome back with Barry Eaton. Barry, why is it in this state of bliss, this afterlife, do people who have these near-death experiences, most of them don't want to come back? They want to stay there.
Well, George, we only hear from the ones that do come back.
That's true.
We can assume that there's probably quite a lot that get there and say, this is it, I'm here, baby, I'm not going to move. But the ones that do come back usually come back for one of a couple of main reasons. The first is that they are told that it is not their time to pass, so their contract is still up and running. And others, I actually tell a story in the book about this guy who went over there, an amazing story. He was bitten by six box jellyfish in Sri Lanka. And he went across there, and he felt he was told to look back down the tunnel, and he saw his mother there, and he just realized that it would absolutely destroy her if he stayed in the afterlife. He was only a young man at the time, so almost against his better judgment, he returned to life, to a pain-racked body, but then went on to have an amazing life. And the other thing about it is that everybody, without question, everybody who has a near-death experience comes back and their lives are changed forever. They do not just keep going the way they were before. And that seems to be the main overriding reason, I would suggest.
Do some of them also come back somewhat supernatural? Do they have enhanced psychic abilities or anything like that?
I think some of them do come back with a heightened intuition, shall we say. Whether they come back as super psychics or whatever, I really couldn't answer that. But certainly they come back with a greater awareness of universal issues, of life being far more than sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And they're looking for more. They're looking for the mysteries of life to be answered. They're looking for more meaning in their life.
All right, let's go to final phone calls here. We'll go to Mary in Riverside, California. Hello, Mary. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to share with you something that your guest validated for me today. A few years ago, my 8-year-old grandson asked me what heaven was like, and his little 4-year-old brother was sitting at the table eating a bowl of soup. And so I said, well, nobody really knows, but everybody has kind of an idea. What do you think? And the little 4-year-old says, oh, it's beautiful. It's all blue and light, and it's really pretty. I was there before I came here.
Aha.
That's lovely.
We get many cases like that. Many, yeah. Indeed. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, Barry. Two different things. One, neurosurgeon Eben Alexander in this country,
yeah,
was in a coma, and he comes back, and he's now a staunch believer in life after death. And
he certainly is. He's written a great book.
Oh, he sure has. Yet they came out with a study last week, some scientists. They were testing mice, and they think, their theory is that the afterlife is just a creation of the dying brain with this burst of what we think is the light and things like that. I've had so many people who have been experts in near-death studies just say that's ridiculous. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly what I've heard too. In fact, it's interesting. I'm just trying to locate it here now on my computer. I had a very good email about this earlier today, basically poo-pooing this whole thing and saying, why do we have to have these so-called scientists who are getting in on this act and saying that it can't possibly happen? If I could only find it here, I could read it to you. But there were some very good answers to the whole thing, which I will post on my website at some stage. But I just do not see why we could answer it so easily as that, because the dying seconds of the brain. That was right. I remember now. It was saying something about that people are able to come up with information when they come back after this near-death experience that they had absolutely no idea about, that they hadn't remembered. So where has this come from, and why would it be there just suddenly in a few moments when they're dying? That just doesn't make sense, and there's many different answers to that one, but I'm sorry, I just cannot accept that at all. What about you, George?
Same thing. There's got to be something on the other side. I mean, I'm sure in your dying state, your brain does things, but it's there. And but, you know, I come across with this, Barry, one of two things will happen. We will die, and we will know that the afterlife exists because we'll be wandering around in it. Or if it doesn't exist, we won't know anyway. It doesn't matter.
That's having an each way bet.
Yeah. Let's go to Brad, Syracuse, New York. Hey, Brad, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey.
Hi, Barry. Barry, before I give you my question, I just want to let you know we've been watching through the process of modern technology a wonderful show from Australia called McLeod's Daughters, and my wife and I just enjoy it thoroughly. It's great to see light.
Oh, that's great. I actually did a small part in one of the episodes a couple of years back, so good on you. I'm glad you enjoy it.
Very good show. Anyway, my question to you is, early in my wife and I's marriage, she was made an observation on my lower back, and I had these raised lines that ran perpendicular to my spine, just raised up a little bit, and she jokingly said, you know, I think you were a pregnant woman in an earlier life, because those look like stretch marks from a pregnancy. So I moved the timeline up here about 30 years later, and I had to stop working in a warehouse with a bunch of guys that had about as much compassion as a motorcycle gang that ran out of beer. So I'm staying at my house, and my daughter becomes pregnant, and she's going through a bad marriage, and she has my granddaughter, and at 6 weeks old, she hands me my granddaughter and says, Dad, you're going to have to take care of her 5 days a week until I don't know when. Well, I watched this little girl for 3 years, and I tell you, I took to this job in my life like a duck to water. And I sometimes wonder, when you talk about life and souls, it seems to me that the whole thing transpires is like a giant jigsaw puzzle without any straight line edges, that we go forward and back. And that little jigsaw puzzle with those lines, I didn't find out until 30 years later. And I wonder what your thoughts were about that.
Look, I think that analogy is wonderful. I spoke earlier in the program, and I've expanded on this in I'm not keep talking about my second book, because I've only just released the first one in the States. But we talk about it, and they talk about it on the other side, as the tapestry of life. And essentially, it's like here we are very busily working away on our little bit of the tapestry, and this is this gargantuan image of this tapestry, and here we think that we've got the whole picture, but we couldn't step back far enough to see it all. But we do have little threads that go out from the bit that we're working on that link us with all manner of people, and past, present, and future. And this is exactly how it works. And that's the analogy they use over in the afterlife, is the tapestry of life, which I think you've identified it beautifully there.
Next up, we go to Max in Portland, Oregon. Welcome to the show. Hi, Max.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
You are very welcome.
Okay, so let me preface this with I'm 24 now, and when I was 15, I lost my grandma to breast cancer, and a year and a half later, my mom to liver cancer. So what I'm very curious about is the soul families, in terms of, you can imagine after that happened, one would be curious where they
went. He was breaking up right at the end a little bit, but talk about the soul families, Barry.
Yeah, I missed that, the second half of that question. I can only presume, Max, you were asking about the members of the soul family, the two members of your family that passed over when you were fairly young. Now, whether or not they were direct members of your soul family, or the fact that they may well have been soul groups very close to your generic soul family, well, there's no way of telling that. And we really don't need to know. We just feel this wonderful empathy. We feel this complete tie and binding and bonds with members of our family and our friends at times, and even sometimes our colleagues at work. And we know deep down that it's more than just some kind of temporary relationship, if you like. That's about the best way I think I can answer that at this stage, not knowing the entire question there.
How many people in this soul group, how close do you have to be to them in whatever your living state might be before they become part of that group? I mean, are they merely...
Apparently, from what I've been told, George, the soul groups were formed many, many ages ago, and we've come down through lifetimes as members of that family. The size of them, well, it just depends. Once again, there's no sort of set number, so it's difficult to answer just how many there might be in your soul family. But how do we recognize them? Well, we just recognize them through... Well, how do you recognize any member of your family? But the thing is, we don't all live in the same house. You know, we've all got families, and they can be scattered all over the country, sometimes all over the world. But when they come together again, there's this bond between all of them. And they all live in different
socioeconomic conditions, according to their status in life, according to their economic position. But that doesn't stop them being members of a family. And that's the same on the other side.
Next up, we have Dean in Tampa. Hey, Dean, thanks for calling. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good evening, gentlemen. Great topic tonight. In fact, you brought back a flood of memories. I can remember when I was 10 years old, nearly drowning on the east coast of Florida. And if you'll excuse me, I'm kind of out of breath. It's just reliving that moment.
Yeah.
But I remember getting pulled under by an undercurrent. The last thing I see is the sun disappearing. And the next thing I see is a white light coming down and embracing me. And at this point, I'm panicking. I'm on the side of the beach where there's no one there. I'm by myself, and I'm thinking I'm dying. And the next, I'm just overcome with this calmness. And the very next moment I see, I'm laying on the beach, I'm by myself, and there's no one around, and I'm completely saved. The next situation, I'm in Dallas, Fort Worth, and I'll make the story short. I'm just merging onto Highway 183, heading into Dallas, and this huge car just comes across three lanes, and in the very last moment, it just nearly clips me, and I start going in a 360. And at this point, it's rush hour in the middle of Dallas, Fort Worth, and there's cars everywhere. And I'm going across three lanes, doing 360s, coming up on two wheels. I'm watching cars go around me and by me. And yet, once again, I had a super calmness because I could see there was literally hands running around my car, and it was like people running around my car. And every time I went up on two wheels, suddenly I was brought back down. And here's the crazy part. As I see these people, my angels running around, stabilizing my car, and I'm going 60 miles per hour, spinning through traffic, I suddenly start going backwards. And I look up, and the people are gone. I'm in my car by myself, and I'm sliding backwards, doing about 50 miles per hour, heading towards a concrete median. And I look up in my rearview mirror, gentlemen, and there's a guy sitting in my car. In my back seat, and I'm reliving these moments, but he's sitting in my back seat, and he's looking at me with this just state of calmness, and at this point, I should be freaking out, because I'm thinking I'm dying. I'm seeing the concrete median coming at me. As I'm sliding there, I just apply the brakes, and I missed the median by a foot. I look up my rear mirror, and he's gone. Fast forward to a real quick story, and back in 2000, I'm sitting there in Grapevine, Texas, and ironically, I just got off the phone talking to Art Bell, and it's a dark night. There's an electrical storm going on, and suddenly from out of nowhere, I'm looking out my window, it's a full Texas moon, and a lightning strike hits the transformer. Boom, all the power goes out. There's nothing. Radio's done. You know, it's total silence. I look next to me, and I'm yet once again by myself in my apartment, and there's six people standing there by the glow of the moonlight, and it was all these women. It was like four generations of women, and they're all wearing clothes from like the 1800s, And at this point, you know, I'm by myself in my apartment. It may be a little startling when you have suddenly six people standing next to you. You know, once again, absolute calmness. So I think it really is. It's like the soul family, and they've always been there with me. So, you know, once again, I have to thank my guardian angels because I wouldn't be able to make this phone call.
And I think they stay forever, Barry, don't they?
Oh, look, they do.
Regardless.
We have changes of guides, but, yeah, your soul family are there with you through thick and thin.
Regardless of how many lives he might have.
Exactly.
They
are sharing quite a few of those lives from time to time. But what a beautiful story that was, or series of stories from Dean. I mean, the angelic presence is there. They are just beautiful stories.
RadioOutThere.com, how can people listen to you? What's our time difference, by the way? What time is it where you are now in Australia?
It is 6:53 p.m. on Thursday night.
6:53 p.m. Thursday night. And here,
yep,
it's 2 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, Friday morning.
There you go.
So we're a little...
Oh, I'm Friday night. I'm sorry. What am I saying?
Oh, okay. That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Oh, look, I'm terribly... Look, I don't even know what day of the week it is. How about that?
Okay, so you are well into your Friday already.
Oh, yeah, we're almost in the latter stages of it.
Okay, so what time is your internet show on?
Well, it's on the internet as a streamed program, George, so anybody
can go
onto the website.
Okay.
Any time at all. Just go on to radiooutthere.com, three words all joined together, two O's, two T's, and it's there. And, yeah, they can find out anything they like.
Let's go to
and
Natalie.
There's a link across to my book.
Okay, we're going to New Orleans now. Hi, Natalie.
Hello.
You're on.
You're my favorite show in the entire universe and beyond.
Well, thank you.
Good
favorite
to you,
Hi, Barry?
Yeah.
I just wanted to tell you thank you very, very, very much for helping people and bringing this information to Earth, to this living, waking realm, because it's been a long, long, long time since I've heard someone who's actually extremely truthful about information that you are releasing. And it's, you know...
It's refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very refreshing and very rare. And I was crying listening to you talk about everything. And I'm very, very picky about what's true and what's not, because I'm an old soul, or they say old soul, but I've definitely, you know, been there, if you know what I mean.
As they say, you've been around. Barry, we only got about 45 seconds left.
Okay, well, thank you, Natalie. And look, it's my pleasure to be able to help people as much as I can with these books.
You are one of a kind, my friend. Nothing like having a broadcaster who also understands the afterlife.
Well, thank you, George, and it's been an absolute privilege being on your program. I thank you so much.
All right. Anytime you want me on yours, you let me know, okay?
Okay. You've got a deal.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much. Barry Eaton, the name of his book, Afterlife, Uncovering the Secrets of Life After Death. If you're on the fence about what's on the other side, you won't be after you read Afterlife. So take advantage of that. And we've got another great night of shows for you tomorrow, so stick with us then. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.